Welcome to the Open to Hope Show in partnership with the Compassionate Friends. I'm your host, Dr. Heidi Horsley, and I'm here today with my mom and co-host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Heidi. Well, we've got a great show today, and somebody I'm very interested in because one of the major publishing houses had gotten in touch with me about the person that's going to be on today, Peter Lichtenberg, because she loved his writing so much and said the publishing house, it wasn't something that they wanted to publish, but she was wondering if we would be interested in it. And he's one of our Open to Hope writers, and he has a fabulous essay on our site. And I would highly recommend that if you have had a spouse loss or any kind of a loss where you want some tips and ideas, it's a great place to go. But introduce our guest, Peter, Heidi.
Absolutely, Mom. And as you said, we are going to talk today about spouse loss. And Peter Lichtenberg is no stranger to this because he's had not one spouse but two spouses die. Peter has dedicated his 30-year career to working with older adults, and he is the director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University. While he was finishing his degree in clinical psychology, at age 25, his wife Becky died while jogging. And 30 years later, his wife Susan died of breast cancer. Grieving and healing from these two great loves has been the greatest challenge of Peter's life. Welcome to our show, Peter.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show, Peter. And you really give us some perspective and thought to grief and loss. And Heidi and I were wondering, you know, your first wife, when she died. Now, do you have children?
I do have children, yes.
Do you have them with both wives or just one?
No, I have them. I have one with neither of those wives and two with Susan.
Okay. So you had none with Becky then.
No.
Those early losses, that's pretty unusual for someone to have a loss. I know you've talked about, what are the percentages and chances of having a spouse die when you're 25 years old?
I think the percentages are about 0.005%.
Wow.
Less than about half of a single percent. It's just miraculously low now. And I contrasted it in my essay with the 1880s, where a gerontologist looked at the death rates then, and it wasn't low at all. It was, you know, about a quarter of the population would die before age 25.
So Peter, when you were just 25, your wife Becky was jogging, and she just died? Is that what happened?
Yeah, she had an underlying condition. I guess she had a subaortic stenosis, so a thickening of the heart. And she had a cardiac arrhythmia and died immediately.
That is so
unusual. You know, it is so traumatic for young people to lose a spouse. Heidi works with the TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for the military, and there are a lot of young widows there, and not as many widowers, but because military, but a lot of young widows, and it's really something, isn't it, Heidi, to have those young people have a loss?
Absolutely, and Peter, I know you can identify with this, because when we hear the word widow, widower, we think of someone that's much older, and I mean, here you were only 25 years old, and you found yourself with that kind of title. It must have been very strange.
It's very strange, and it's very strange for those around you, because really, when they talk about it in terms of the stress literature, it's an off-time event. None of your peers or cohort are experiencing that.
I like that word, an off-time event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do, too, because it just shows how much you stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, and the interesting thing is, Peter, although it would be 30 years before Susan died, you were still a relatively young widower, I should say. I mean, you were only 55 years old, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. So, less than 5% of people my age currently are widowers.
That's
wow. I mean, I bet you just absolutely were. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's incredible to have that happen twice. I mean, it's probably a better chance of being struck by lightning.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's sort of why I wanted to write my essay, because it's so unusual. To experience it twice and to just sort of put down on paper what it's like for a widower and sort of a no-holds-barred type of account.
And how, well, what were the hardest parts of dealing with Becky's death at that early 25? And was it different with Susan's?
Very different. And one of the things is I learned a lot from dealing with Becky's death. I think, you know, in retrospect, there were two hardest parts about Becky's death. One was her family. They were not very helpful to me, and that really set a bad tone for getting going. But two was about 8 months after her death, I moved away to go on internship, and that was a huge mistake. That was just, I got down to Gainesville, Florida from Indiana, where I was in graduate school, didn't know anybody, and totally fell apart. I just basically dragged myself through that year. It was without a doubt, the worst year of my life.
Wow, that's really hard. You had no support, and internships are stressful.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So that was a bad mistake. And I used a lot of that when I kind of sensed that Susan was starting to fail, to start to rally my support system.
So you could be proactive. Yeah.
Yeah, I told two of my dear friends, my college roommate, and another dear friend from my profession, that I asked them, will you come stay with me? And basically, I had someone with me for about a month.
Oh, my gosh. What a great proactive thing to not get all isolated again.
Yeah, it made all the difference. It really did. And I also was able to talk to my employer about that first summer for the kids to take a leave of absence. So we took a nice 7-week trip. So those things really helped, you know, do it right, if you will, and get yourself off to a better start. And then it's still a long haul, though.
Well, and I think you're saying something that's really important for people out there, and that is that sometimes we have to tell people what we need. I mean, you rallied the troops and said, this is what I need. Can you come in and support me? And I think that, you know, sometimes we expect people to be psychic and we think that they should kind of know what we want, but oftentimes they really don't know, and they sometimes even don't want to bother us.
I couldn't agree with you more, Heidi. You know, in my grief support group, the spouse support group, people were bemoaning the way neighbors treated them or friends, and I tried to gently bring up that point. You know, I don't think people really know, and I know they didn't after Becky died, and I didn't have to say to them, hey, I really need this. Can you come through for me? And it was a lot easier this time to just ask. And, for example, the first few months, I knew that Sundays were going to be terrible. That was the day that Susan died. And so I had a friend of mine set up kind of a rotating schedule for people to come play ping pong with me for about half an hour or an hour at my house.
I love that.
Oh, I love that.
And that was great. I socialized a little bit, not too much. I love to play ping pong. And it really was a bridge, if you know what I mean, to like get to a little bit more normal place.
That is such a great idea. Because I'm just thinking, my mom and I have done so many shows on how grief gets trapped in your body.
Yes.
And, you know, you're moving around. And also, there's not a lot of pressure just to sit there and talk. You can talk if you want. You can focus on the ball if you want.
It's really true. Exactly.
Yeah, any kind of sports, like I think hitting sports. I'm a golfer, so I think hitting sports, tennis, whatever, just going out and throwing a ball.
Yeah, I agree.
Probably be a good activity, especially, I think, for guys, sometimes they just want to get together and do something sporting. Women tend, I think, to want to talk a lot more about it. I don't know. Has that been in your experience?
You know, I'm kind of a talker, but I didn't really have that many people that wanted to listen when Becky died. But one of the things that did happen, and I think men have to watch out for this, a few months in, I played a lot of basketball back then, and all of a sudden, all my energy was into playing basketball, and it got a little nasty. I got my anger going. I almost got my lights punched out. My friend Harold grabbed me, threw me off the court, said, get out of here, buddy. And because I was just so obnoxious for a couple
Now, was that with the first one or the second one?
Yeah, with the first one.
Yeah, when you're that age.
Yeah.
So that makes me think, did you learn something? Well, you were able to take some things that you learned during the first loss. You've already talked about some of them. But what would you say to me? I actually have a friend right now whose husband is in his 50s. It looks like he's not going to live. And what would you say to me to prepare for that?
Mm-hmm. You know,
and how can I also help her as a friend?
Yeah, I don't know if he's been able to talk to her about his dying, how he wants to die.
I don't think it's been totally. It's just a shock of a new thing right mm-hmm. now.
Okay. Yeah. As the shock wears off, that might be very helpful because it really helped to know that I was doing what Susan wanted,
mm-hmm.
and it meant a lot to me. I don't know if he's the kind of person that would write some notes to her to have after he's gone. That would help a lot. I did a lot of searching for, you know, I knew I was there for Susan when she had cancer, and all of a sudden I started wondering, well, how about earlier parts of our marriage? Did she have as much fun as I did? And she had written this essay that I found at the six-month anniversary of her death. I just found it on her computer. And it was everything I needed. It was all about us and our life pre-cancer. And it was, it was a shot in the arm that I really valued. But I also think you do have to start preparing your support network for things that you're going to need,
mm-hmm.
either during or after.
And Peter, how old were you? You said you had children with Susan. How old were they when she died?
So my son, Thomas, was 12, and my daughter, Sophie,
wow.
was 9. So
you had small, young children.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And, Susan was sick 44 months. So when you think about it, Sophie doesn't have many memories of Susan as a fully healthy person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Susan was amazing. She never was in bed or anything like that. But still, you know, she was undergoing treatments, and sometimes she didn't feel well, and sometimes she didn't have hair. So Sophie knew she was sick.
So for almost 4 years she was in treatment, is that right? On and off?
Yeah. On and off, always. She's one of those mammogram failures, that breast density tissue didn't pick up on her tumors. It never did, actually. An ultrasound did, and by the time they picked up on it, even though she got mammograms every year, I had already spread to her bones and liver.
Wow. So what would you tell parents out there that have surviving children that have just recently experienced the death of a parent, of their mother?
I think that I tried a few different things. One thing is that I was very good about communicating with the school.
Mm-hmm.
Way before Susan's death.
And Susan, again, that preparation that you knew.
And Susan was, too. And the day that she died, I didn't leave the hospital till I talked to both principals. My kids went to school the next day, believe it or not. They didn't miss. I tried to keep the routine for a while very, very much the same. And that was helpful for my children. It wouldn't be for everybody's.
Well, what I find in working with children, and my mom said, I worked with the 9/11 widows for 10 years, often the children would want to stay at home to take care of the surviving parent because they were worried about them.
Yeah.
So I love that you encouraged your kids to stay in routine and to stay in school, because the research does show that that's the best way for most kids to find hope after a loss, and is to go to school and stay in routine.
And the teachers were amazing, principals too. So it was fantastic, the support they got. And another thing, in our household, Susan is still very much present.
Mm-hmm.
We don't only talk about her, but my neighbor put together these beautiful pictures, like four big things of pictures for the memorial service. I had them framed. I put one in each of the kids' rooms, and one in mine, and one in the hallway. And it's good to have.
Now, how long has she been gone?
She has been gone 26 months.
26 months, so 2 years.
Yeah.
I love that you still keep her memory alive and that you're continuing those bonds.
Yeah, for them I am, and I keep a lot of things. I started a scholarship in Becky and Susan's name, and I keep all the descriptions of the scholarship recipients. Susan won a posthumous award from the Cancer Society.
Wow.
Cancer Institute, and so I have kept all that documentation. So I keep a lot of things for the kids when they're older. They may want or not, but I think they will. I look at it, this is a lifetime set of experiences for them. It's never going to be over. And I just try to help them do as best they can. And right now, for them, life is pretty happy.
That's great. And that's a testament to some of the things that you've done. So what things do you think that you've done for yourself to find hope again and to start finding hope again?
I think the biggest difference, and it's kind of a difference even in the grief literature. You know, when I lost Becky, all the literature and all the books that people pushed at me said, you got to let go, you got to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was traumatic for me. I did, or I tried to, and really had to come back around again to bring Becky back where she needed to be in my life. With Susan, I never tried to let go, and I've kept her close, and that's inspired me, and it's given me a lot of hope because, you know, we were exceptionally close, so I was with Becky, too, and I'm just the kind of person, I think my work means a lot to me, too, the kind of work I'm doing right now to help prevent financial exploitation of older adults, it just energizes me, and I just am a passionate person, and I think without feeling the guilt or depression that I did feel with Becky, I think that it really has enabled me to grieve, and it's very hard, but also to enjoy life and to have a lot of hope again.
I wondered, have you heard of the Soaring Spirits Foundation?
No.
You might want to take a look at the Soaring. It's Michelle Neff Hernandez, and she is a widow, or was a widow. She's actually remarried, but she started the organization in memory of her husband, who actually died jogging, and probably about the time that you lost Becky. I mean, not that, you know, this
yeah.
around the same age.
Yeah.
Anyway, she has started the Soaring Spirits Foundation, and it's really interesting. It's Camp Widow, and you can blog and connect with widows and widowers online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite wonderful. It's she's a great person, so you might want to take a look at that.
I will definitely do that. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, so she's great. Well, I wanted to ask you, how do you keep the relationship with Becky and Susan together? I mean, how does that work for you when you've lost two loves? And you know, how does that work for you in your mind?
Yeah, Susan was amazing that way. And this was really the testament to Susan, the kind of person she was. And she told me, look, Becky's not between us. I have all of you. And I know that you love Becky deeply. And that's part of why I love you so much.
Wow, that's fabulous.
And she really, they were like sisters in her mind. And her favorite phrase to me was, look, Peter, I talk to Becky all the time trying to figure out how to handle you.
Oh, I like Susan. She was great.
She is great. She had a great sense of humor. And she was incredibly wise and able to you know, be so mature about it.
And able to handle able to fall in love with someone that had lost their love. Some people wouldn't be able to handle that. They would
yep.
look at it as a competition.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what do you think the blocks, as a seeing people, widows and widowers and older people, what do you think blocks them from finding their happiness again? I mean, what do you think the major things are? Do you have any thought on that?
Yeah, one thing is it's a shock to people. They really don't believe their spouse is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a death is such a shock still. And it says something about our society and our experiences because people are just like, how could this happen? And I think that disbelief really is tough for people to get past a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you thinking that people, if they feel like there's a block, should they try individual therapy or group or whatever? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think they should try something and, you know, whatever they're most comfortable with. I think individual therapy can be very, very helpful and sometimes augmented with a support group and things like that can be incredibly useful. I found it to be very helpful and you know, grief support groups, and I was in a the co-survivor support group before Susan died, too. You have to ride the ups and downs of support groups. Some days you're like, why did I come? This is not. not helpful to me, and I feel terrible leaving. And other days you're like, oh, my gosh, I learned so much today. So you have to ride the ups and downs and let those relationships with other group members come slowly.
I like that advice, Peter. I think that's really good advice for support groups. Peter, we're going to close in a minute, and I wanted to know, where can people find you?
They can find me on www.iog.wayne.edu. That's the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University.
And you can also find him at Open to Hope. And if you love what he's been saying right now, you're going to find so much richness in the essay he wrote for Open to Hope. So you can go to opentohope.com and find Peter right online there. Go to Finding Our Authors, and he's there. Well, Peter, thank you so much. Your wisdom is great, and really enjoyed the show. And your essay is amazing.
Thank you both so much for having me.
Thank you, Peter. You're such an inspiration. I mean, you really are an inspiration on how you can find hope after loss. And thank you for everything you're doing.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to this radio show today. And Heidi and I always want to remind you that if you've lost hope, please lean on ours until you find your own. And God bless.
You've been listening to Open to Hope Radio, hosted by Drs. Gloria and Heidi Horsley. Like today's edition, all of our past programs are available on demand at opentohope.com, along with helpful articles, videos, resources, and links to help get you through the toughest time of your life. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Again, that's opentohope.com. Check it out today. Then be sure to stop by next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we'll be posting another edition of Open to Hope Radio. Remember, others have been where you are. They made it through, and you can too, as long as you're open to hope.